If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S. Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Adam, my next-door neighbor is practicing guitar, I think, right now, so I'm hoping that that's not making it into the recording, but if it is, I'm sorry that somebody's practicing guitar very quietly in the background.
No stairway. Denied.
That's so weird. Like, I guess when you're in California, you get to have an apartment beneath a tree on a college campus.
Uh-huh, yeah.
That's the only place anyone practices a guitar, in my experience.
I think my next-door neighbor is a professional musician, and I believe she is known to our mutual friend John Roderick.
Oh, no!
If it gives you any idea of what Seattle is like culturally at the moment... musicians from Seattle are moving to Los Angeles. Not something that many would have predicted 10 years ago, I think.
Adam, do you have any interest in getting some of your frustration out via the method of going to war?
It's basically the only way I can feel anything anymore, Ben. I would love
to. Get those cards out, buddy.
All right. They're out.
We're at war.
There's been no formal declaration of war.
Maybe this trip will bring us some luck.
That nonsense is centuries behind us.
War! Go to war!
Just for first-timers, I feel like we don't do enough to tell first-timers what is going on our show.
We should be more welcoming to first-timers. First-timers joining the show every week. They're tweeting at us, sending us emails with questions about where all of our bits come from.
Yeah.
More bits than show, really, is the sort of podcast we're doing.
There is a Greatest Gen Wiki out there with all of the bits taken apart in great detail, and it's like a resource that really blows me away because I look at it sometimes and I go like, oh my God, what have we done?
It really helps me understand my own show in a way that I wouldn't otherwise.
Yeah, but Card War is a game that we play from time to time that the basic premise of which is we're using these Star Trek collectible card game cards and making our own Vegas-like gambling game out of it. And it's best of three or best of four, depending on whatever we decide in the moment.
That's right. Our scoring system is purely subjective. We have a quick debate over which card is best, and then we move on to the next. Are you ready, Ben, for the first card?
I am ready.
3, 2, 1, flip. Ben, my card is a dilemma card. It is Cosmic String Fragment. A long space object, as thin as a proton, but with the gravitational attraction of 100 stars. Thin as a proton was my high school nickname, Ben. You don't want to get called thin as a proton in gym class.
Yeah, you walked out of that locker room a different person.
It's one of the reasons I didn't want to shower with the rest of the class. It says at the bottom, ship is sucked in and destroyed unless astrophysics or engineer or navigation aboard.
I have no idea what card I flipped over here. Man, it's upside down on both sides.
What?
It says exobiology plus strength greater than 35, and that's facing both directions, so that I guess if you're sitting across the table from somebody, they can read it also. And then it says gamma irregulon 2, trace radiation anomalies reported at this location.
I was flipping back through the cards that I've already opened for war, looking for bidirectional cards, and I found one. It was repair mission. Yours is a little more inscrutable than this.
Yeah.
I would say that maybe if we don't understand it, it would lose to cosmic string fragment.
I think cosmic string fragment is the thing that put Deanna Troi in charge of the ship, so I think that's a win on for you.
How destructive is that? Yeah, I'm inclined to agree.
You want to flip another one?
Yeah, let's do it.
3, 2, 1. Mine is Tybok, a Romulan scientist who developed a mind control device using E-band emissions, controlled Lieutenant Commander Geordi LaForge through his visor. Tybok is weighing in with an integrity of 2, a cunning of 8, and a strength of 8. He also has treachery, biology, and computer skill.
Ooh. What I have is Batrel, Klingon trained as an officer for the Klingon Defense Force, formerly in command of Narendra 3 Outpost. Narendra 3 was the outpost, famously, that the Enterprise-C was defending, right?
Oh.
Before they went into the space butthole.
Yeah.
But I don't remember Batrel being a part of that.
No.
Oh, wait, was Batrel one of the peeps in that weird Romulan camp? Narendra 3 had survivors, and then they went to go live on that camp that the Romulans took over, and then Worf went there and taught them how to use garden tools, right? Is that all the same story?
I thought that those were survivors of Khitomer, a different treacherous Romulan attack.
Save your fucking letters, guys. All right. You know, there's so many Klingon prisoners of war these days,
yeah.
Man. It's hard to keep them all straight. I think I like your card, bottom line.
Yeah, I'd say it's a 1-to-1.
Yeah.
It's anybody's game.
Yeah. As we go to round 3, Ben, 3, 2, 1. My card is an event, and it's a big one. It's the Federation Klingon Treaty. This card plays on the table, Ben. Your Federation and Klingon affiliations recognize this treaty. They can now mix and cooperate.
So this is a very post-discovery card.
Yeah, Terran Empire would hate this idea.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be bad news bears for them. My card is a Romulan outpost. It's Romulus, one of the 2 homeworlds for the Romulans. The Romulan Star Empire establishes outposts throughout its territory.
Well, it's always a chess game when the Romulans are involved, Ben. And I would say over the long term, an alliance between the Federation and the Klingons versus the Romulans is often sort of a stalemate, wouldn't you say?
I think that's a great way to look at it. And that's sort of making me want to flip over a 4th card.
Let's go ahead and do that then.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, flip. I have an event. Espionage, Klingon on Federation. Klingon espionage against the Federation has included data stolen from Relay Station 47 by Morag.
My card is one of those bidirectionals. It's Fever Emergency. Ben, do you think if the players using your card get the fever that they wouldn't be able to use that card for their espionage?
Yeah, I think that there may be some compromising effects in this fever.
No, could be tough.
What do you say, Adam? Do you got a case to make?
Well, I mean, they seem like they're very different cards, very different problems.
Yeah, it's a bit of an apples to oranges issue. Do we need to flip one more?
Let's keep going until we have a very clear winner, is what I say.
Yeah. Okay.
3, 2, 1. I think you might have me here, Ben. I have the Lowly Engineering Kit. Representative of specialized engineering instruments, such equipment has been developed by many races. It is equipment, Ben.
Oh.
Can you beat equipment?
Mine is an interrupt card, and it's a shot of the entrepreneur flying into an asteroid in that that episode where they develop the cloaking shield that they can also pass through solid matter. And it says, Asteroid Sanctuary. Hoping to avoid detection by a Romulan warbird, the USS Enterprise entered a giant asteroid cavern in 2370.
Was that the thing that Wesley Crusher broke on that one planet, the Asteroid Sanctuary?
Yeah, they wanted to kill him over that.
Yeah, gotta be careful stomping around in the sanctuary. I think you got me there, Ben. Anything of the scale of a starship and an asteroid, I think, would take down the lowly engineering kit. So
that crushes a kit.
Yeah, I think you got me. Good game, Ben.
Good game, Adam.
Well, one episode that is most certainly not messing around with frivolous things is maybe the most serious of Season 1 Deep Space Nine episodes. It's episode 18, and it's called Duet.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
I mean, this episode does start a little light. Like, it's Kira and Dax just, like, they're kind of, like, having a conversation that is happening, like, in the midst of them doing some work.
The thing you talk about first is who would you fuck on the station, and they already did that on a runabout a couple episodes ago, right? Now they're getting into other matters.
They played FMK in, like, episode 3.
I feel like very often when I first meet a person, I go right for the edges of the envelope conversationally to figure out, you know, where I stand with someone. If we can play the game with the jokes and stuff.
Yeah. Ferocious, aren't I?
And I think this is very good friendship making by Kira and Dax to begin with a Mournhammer conversation and then maybe backfill those opinions with some of the lighter stuff that doesn't really matter as much. You want to know where someone stands on that.
Fuck, marry, kill, Adam. Quark, Odo, Morn.
Fuck, marry, kill, Quark, Odo, Morn. I feel like the marry is often the easiest choice from any of these. And I think I'm probably going to marry Morn because he's quiet. You know, like no matter what, he's going to be like the ceiling on how annoying he is going to be fairly low. So
right.
I'm going to marry Morn. Also a great lover. I don't think there's any question about that.
Dude has a rep.
I think fuck has got to be Odo, right? You're never going to get a fuck like that. He's going to fill you up. or conversely, like you're going to wear him like you've never worn anything before.
Yeah.
And I guess by virtue of elimination, we're going to kill Quark.
Sorry, Quark.
Him anymore.
Peace out.
Yeah.
I feel like I might switch Morn and Quark with you.
Yeah.
I would fuck Odo, but I think I might marry Quark because I just feel like he's going to, you know, he's greedy enough that he's going to set me up in the long term.
That's true. You're going to have a real nice house. You're going to have a lot of fun to be had, a lot of fun and adventure.
Yeah.
You're going to be very different from Morn, who just wants to sit at home and drink.
And if Quark is, like, not in the mood for it one night, there's, like, 5 holosuites available at all times.
Yeah, there's an element of escapism here. Does holosuite count as adultery? Or, like, not if it's only consensual holosuite?
Right. Yeah, I suppose that's really the Measure of a Man episode that we never get in Deep Space Nine, is, like, somebody, like, O'Brien accused of banging another woman, but the other woman was a hologram.
This show goes so many places in terms of characters' morality, but I can't remember it ever going there, which means that the matter must have been settled far before this show was ever made, right? The social contract of holosuite bangs is understood by everyone, but I guess we don't really get to see the consequences of that.
yeah, this primetime television show didn't get into the like seedy sexual ethics of Deep Space Nine as much as it could have.
Yeah, but I mean, when you march Quark around with like two Dabo babes showing like three quarters underboob each, like it's, I think they could go there. They just didn't.
Yeah.
They would rather retell a viral infection story four times in a season than tread on any new ground, I guess.
Yeah. Well, maybe if Star Trek Discovery winds up being the anthology show that it was hinted to be early on, they'll hire us for a season two set in the 24th century and we can write that episode.
Boy, I really hope so.
It'd be nice.
I'm hoping friend of the podcast, Mary Wiseman, can make the proper introductions.
Put in the good word. Adam, they get hailed by a freighter, and it's one of those guys that is related to Ferengis.
This is the Koberian freighter Rak Munis requesting permission to dock.
They've got like a fin on their head instead of giant ears, and he says they've got a sick puppy on board, and they need to beam one of their passengers directly to Six Bay. Got a disease called Kalinora, and the only person on the entire station that has apparently heard of this disease is Kira, because it is extremely rare and only known to have been contracted by victims of an accident at like a forced labor camp that the Cardassians operated during the occupation.
Survivors of Galatep have always been a symbol to us of strength and courage.
Nana Visitor's reaction to this is pretty epic. Like, they do a quick around the horn, like, Kalinora, what is that? And Sisko's like, that sounds interesting. And Kira's like, what the fuck?
she's initially like very concerned for this person because she assumes it's going to be one of the Bajorans who was essentially enslaved there. And she was part of liberating the camp. So she has really strong emotional connection to this event.
This is a part of her character that they sort of tease. Like, she was on the forces that cleaned up the mess after the war. But in this episode, you really get a lot of detail into what exactly her job was and what exactly she saw and what her damage is because of it.
Yeah. My emotional connection to Kalinora is that the two popular girls at my high school were Kayla and Nora.
My only association with Kalinora was that I had to. You ever get chicken pox, Ben? You have to put that Kalinora lotion on your pox.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't scar.
I got poison oak one time, and I think that's what I used.
Yeah, pink stuff.
Yeah, don't confuse it with Pepto Bismol. That's Kalinora. Kira goes down to Six Bay, and Bashir, like they do the reveal where Bashir is like wrenching on somebody's head, and then he steps away, and it is not a Bajoran, but a Cardassian.
Kira to Odo.
Go ahead.
I'm in the infirmary. I need security here on the double.
I'm on my way, Major.
This is a pretty bad moment for Kira.
Yeah. It's like you show up for dinner expecting a hamburger and it's like steamed vegetables. Disappointing, you know? You got your switch flipped for one thing and it's something else entirely.
The reveal also revealed something else to me, Ben. Is that it's Harris Yulin. One of the great that guys in TV and film. You might know him, Ben, as the guy who plays National Security Advisor Cutter from Clear and Present Danger.
Cutter couldn't tie his shoes without permission.
Yeah.
He's also the judge in Ghostbusters 2 in that opening scene.
Yeah, he's been in a million things.
He is great. He's like one of those gravitas guys.
Yeah, he was on 24 for that reason.
Right.
For all of the like white powerful man gravitas that he has.
You know how my voice is real like thin and reedy like an oboe? You've noticed that, right?
I've suffered through 190-something episodes of that, Adam.
God, I just wish more than anything that as I age, I get some Harris Yulin voice.
Get down into that Harris Yulin register.
Yeah. God. Like, what is it going to take? Is it going to take, like, me screaming into a pillow for, like, years at a time to, like, fracture my vocal cords?
It's just back and forth from, like, big fat pull on cigar to exhaling by screaming into pillow and back. Gotta get the Cubans at him.
I know. Gotta get
They're
the good
smooth,
stuff.
But they will change your voice over time.
Yeah.
It's all that nicotine going in there and killing cells in your vocal cords.
The one thing you want to do is inhale cigar smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Pro cigar smokers will tell you.
Kira turns to Dr. Bashir and she's like, hey, guess what, buddy? Your patient is a war criminal. And this Cardassian does maybe the lamest escape attempt in TV history.
Like, if you ever get me on a gym basketball court, like, this is the sort of head fake that this Cardassian does. Very,
yeah.
And then he sort of loses the basketball down the promenade and chases after it.
He doesn't even, like, knock over a pitcher or a table or anything to cause a distraction.
You gotta flip over a table so that the guys have to jump over it behind you.
If this was a performance choice that Harris Yulin made, then he's gone down several notches in my book.
You're never gonna make the in memoriam reel at the Oscars with this sort of performance, Harris. Get it together.
The slow lethargic jog where you don't even look out the door that you're busting out of to see if there are four security guys coming your way.
He's like the reverse Pepe Le Pew. Like, he's out front, but he's slow.
Odo is quite happy to take Kira's initial order to toss this guy in the brig. And she tells the doctor to, like, continue treating him in there. It's just, you know, like, this is an arrest without cause at this point, as far as everybody knows. But apparently that's okay here on Space Station Deep Space Nine.
A lot of this season has been about, like, a lot of cold opens even, have been about Kira Nerys's feelings about things. And then it's up to the crew to sort of either help her out to those ends or to fight her on it. And fairly early on, Sisko is of the innocent until proven guilty variety of person, carrying the water for the Federation. And Kira is, like, so sure that this guy is a war criminal because he's got that Galatep cough that is that is the sign of war criminals who have worked at this forced labor camp that she liberated.
The Galatep cough has been unfairly maligned. It is the only way to stay thin and sexy in your old age.
I have the Galatep cough myself, and yet I still smoke the cigarettes.
How could I be smoking like this if the Galatep cough is so bad, Major Kira?
Sir, you can't smoke in a movie theater.
Get your hands off of me!
What is wrong with you? I will smoke wherever I want. Is it not a free country?
I really like the scene where Kira and Sisko are in Odo's office, like, discussing why she had this guy locked up.
I'm charging him with having contracted Kalanora.
Partly because it is, like, it really firmly establishes where the lines of tension are going to be in this episode.
Do you want to explain that to me?
But partly because I feel like this is establishing some new stuff about this space, or maybe I just never noticed it, but they're close enough to the walls in Odo's office that you can see that some of the screens have, like, Galaxy's Most Wanted posters on them.
Right, yeah.
I really wanted the camera to rack so that I could get an in-focus shot of some of those, because they look hilarious, and I would love to see what those were.
If only we had an HD transfer, we could punch in a little bit.
Yeah, you know when you're in the art department and you've got some, like, fine text to put in soft focus in the background of a shot, you can have a lot of fun with that. And, like, there were definitely a couple times in TNG where we could, like, pause a computer screen that was supposed to just whiz by.
Right.
And see what they had written on it. And it was always fun.
Yeah, there's always an Easter egg buried in there somewhere.
Yeah.
You're right about the tension visited upon Sisko, because he is getting pulled in a lot of different directions. There's Kira's motivation toward prosecuting a crime that she sees that's been personified by Harris Yulin's character, Cardassian character. And then there's also the tension, like, he's being forced to play the middle between the Bajoran government, who obviously wants to prosecute and punish a war criminal. There's also the Cardassians, who want this guy back.
There's also the Irish, who want his first name, and the Italians, who want his last name.
Sisko's pretty cool-headed about this. He sort of wants to put Odo on the case because Kira's too close.
Yeah, and I think that that's the way that Sisko is trying to play this, trying to just be dispassionate about it.
Yeah.
Trying to hear everybody out. Like, the Bajoran, you know, minister of state or something calls him up and is like, is pretty adamant that if this guy has this disease, then he was at the camp and therefore is a bad dude. And the, you know, we get some fun, like, back and forth FaceTimes with Gul Dukat in this episode where,
right,
you know, he's saying, this is, you know, you can't just arrest somebody because they're Cardassian and have a sickness. Like, you don't have anything to accuse this guy of, so why don't you let him go?
All Cardassians look like they have really long necks, but Dukat looks like he just has a fucking giraffe neck.
He really does.
Guy's got an amazing neck. Real Merton Hanks of Cardassia.
I also appreciated that wherever Gul Dukat is clearly art directed, even though it's like always on a small screen and not in focus. It's not the flat wall with like one logo on it that we would get for Romulan Bridge so often in TNG. There's like color and depth in this shot. It's cool.
It took a really long time for TNG to get here, but it is noticeable right now in season one just how few people Sisko has to talk to about either personal or mission problems.
Right.
I feel like if this were a third season TNG episode, the McLaughlin group
issue one
would break up, people would leave, and then Riker and Picard would discuss, you know, what a sticky wicket this one's going to be, you know, before going on with the rest of the episode. You really only have Sisko's words in a professional conversation to glean where he's at here.
And furthermore, I think that the kind of political arrangement of Starfleet administering Deep Space Nine has been left vague enough that it's not really clear what the rules are.
Yeah.
He's being told by the Bajoran government guy, hey, you gotta keep this guy. We're going to put a war crimes tribunal together. And he is saying, you know, we have a different, like, approach to justice in the Federation, and that's, like, where my loyalties lie. But it's like, is it? I just don't understand, like, how much this is a Starfleet thing and how much it's a Bajoran thing. Where does the buck stop? What's the ultimate authority on this issue?
It's like anything else. When a clear hierarchy has not been established, it breeds all sorts of conflict. And this happens over and over again on this show, in the first season especially.
I mean, I think that this episode could have been used to flesh some of that out and have some very specific choices made, and I feel like it stays squishy and ill-defined.
Right. So this guy says his name is Eamon Maritza, and through the interrogation that Kira gives him in the brig, he cops to the idea that he's a file clerk. He's not the bad guy that people are making him out to be. There's no way that he could have been in charge of a prison camp and killed all those people.
He was just following orders.
He got the wrong guy.
It wasn't me. It was the one-armed man.
You know, he has this real, like, you know, acts like this is persecution and it's not really fair that they've locked him up.
Persecuting Cardassians goes far beyond your job, Major. It's your passion.
Every time somebody comes down, he wants to be released. He feels like, you know, he has a right to do what he is doing, which is just traveling through. And he even expresses some admiration for Gul Darheel, the Cardassian that ran the camp that he worked at.
Sure.
guess Guldar Heel went to college in North Carolina.
I get it.
This must have been before the war.
Yeah.
This is such a Kira episode, Adam. There's almost no Quark, almost no O'Brien. It is like Kira doing some stuff and Odo and Sisko and to a very greater, lesser extent, Dax interacting with it.
It's a bottle episode, but there's also no B or C story. It is all A, which I thought made it kind of an outlier for what we've seen really in the entire series. Like all the Star Trek series that we've watched, there's usually a subplot, but there is none here.
There's none, and it's, especially in this season, it has felt sometimes like, oh, there is a C storyline because the A and B are too weak to support themselves under their own structure. So let's like get Jake and Nog stealing popsicles as a thing also.
Sure. Throughout the episode, Maritza has the charisma of an evil man. A man who has sort of made peace with his circumstances. There's something about the charisma of evil and how it's portrayed here that I found was like really fascinating.
Yeah, he monologues like an arch villain.
We're professional bad guys. Ding. Hello.
Yes, please. Belittle me in front of my henchmen.
In a fucked up way, it takes charisma to do bad things.
Yeah, I think so.
And to get people to follow you into those bad things.
It's kind of the opposite of the banality of evil. Like it's the part that like convinces people to follow as we like start a project that is terrible.
Right.
I mean, this guy, for all they can tell is telling the truth. He's a file clerk, but Kira really doesn't. She, like, her gut is telling her, and his disposition is telling her that he's something much worse than that. And she confesses at some point, I think to Dax, that she wants him to be worse than that. She wants him to be like the embodiment of Cardassian impropriety so that she can personally punish him.
You know, if Kira and Sisko are supposed to be equals on the station representing their sides, in this episode at least, Kira is given friends and foils to converse with about her situation, Dax being one of them. Dax really gives her some good counseling about, like,
you already know if you punish him without reason, it won't mean anything. And you already know vengeance isn't enough.
And Odo,
I'm Mr. Bunkin,
more or less does the same thing with her when he gives her the blue raspberry lemonade Kool-Aid of discovering your prisoner has done genocide.
Perhaps you should avoid discussing your personal history with a creature like that.
I didn't.
There's real counseling by Kira's closest here. And these are really short, small, dialogue-efficient scenes. But they really do a lot to underscore how tight she's become with people on the station. And they're not just people on her team. Like Dax's True Blue Federation, and they talk about dick stuff together, so they're super tight.
At some point on FaceTime, Dukat and Sisko agree to like do a little information sharing because he's saying like it's a little bit out of my hands. We'll release this guy if he proves to not be a war criminal, but that investigation is incomplete, and one way you could help us complete this investigation quicker is if you give us some of the Cardassian records, like give us some limited access to the computer, and we'll take a look. And this leads to Blade Runner photo computer scene, mm-hmm. where they've got a shot of some stuff going down at Galatep, like in the mine, and it's Bajoran laborers and Cardassian soldiers, and they zoom in on the Cardassian that is labeled in the photo as being Aemon Maritza, and it's a different dude.
Parentheses R in the subtitle to the photo.
Because he's a Republican?
No, I mean, like, when there are photo attributions and, like...
Oh, because he's on the right-hand side of the shot?
Yeah. That's how I meant that.
Yeah. And like Blade Runner.
But also, if you're going to run a prison camp, you're probably a Republican.
Yeah, fair bet. Like Blade Runner, they have the ability in this photo program to, like, fly the camera around in three-dimensional space.
Enhance. Enhance. Enhance.
Just print the damn thing!
They swing the camera around and get a look at the face of the Cardassian, who's labeled as Guldar Heel, and it's a dead ringer for the guy they have down in the brig. And in this moment, I feel like Kira is getting exactly what she wants. Like, the guy that they arrested as Maritza is the worst possible Cardassian.
It's a real Finkel is Einhorn, Einhorn is Finkel moment to Kira. Remember that at the end?
Oh. She's my sister and my daughter?
Yeah. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And this, like, to whatever degree Kira has a short fuse about this guy, this basically cuts it off completely. She is an explosive with no fuse, and she's ready to go off.
Yeah, it's such a weird, complicated emotion, right? It's just what she wanted. This guy really was responsible for tons of mass murder and stuff. I think at this point also, Maritza has, like, made the case that maybe Guldar Heel wasn't a mass murderer. Like, there was this accident with this disease, but he's saying, like, the reputation of being a mass murderer, the fear that arises from that is just as good whether or not it happened, and is saying that Guldar Heel cultivated that reputation while actually just being, like, a really effective leader.
Yeah, like, the case he makes is that it wasn't genocide, it was just good marketing. Which is really fucking dark.
Yeah. And a pretty complicated idea that I feel like they kind of forget to dig into.
Right.
Toward the end. Spoiler alert, he turns out not to be Darheel. But, like, if he had turned out to be Darheel, but also hadn't done all of the murdering that he had marketed himself as having done, doesn't that make him, like, not a war criminal?
It gets to, like, the nature of fear, right?
Right.
The nature of fear during wartime, especially.
And psychological operations that you play against your enemy.
Yeah.
And he really takes the position that there wasn't even a war. It was an occupation, and that...
There was no war. No glory. Bajor didn't resist. It surrendered.
But... the Cardassians left because it was politically unsustainable, not because they were wrong to have done it in the first place or because they lost for any reason.
What are you doing now?
Guldar Heel really stiffens up and changes his posture. He changes his level of confidence. Like, as soon as he's found out, he makes the claim to Kira that...
I yearned to tell you, but I knew how much more satisfaction you would have if you found out for yourself, and that was my only deception.
Now we can get to you trying me for my crimes and executing me. Like, wouldn't that be great for you? Like, he's really relishing... what this is doing to Kira.
He's gone full Big Lebowski, The Bum's Lost
rant.
Yeah. And he's saying, like, my accomplishments speak for themselves. I am great at what I do, and I was great at what I did, and you're a nobody to me. But it kind of like, in that moment, in watching this and not knowing what was to come, I was wondering, like, why the fuck would he have been on some dumpy freighter, like, coming through the station? Like, why route your travel via Deep Space Nine if this is who you are, you know?
That's the reason why you can't really give yourself over to any sort of satisfaction at this point in the story.
Yeah, it doesn't quite add up.
Yeah.
as much of a heel he is. Like, he's so fun to hate in this moment.
I think Odo says that almost verbatim. Something doesn't add up about this. Do you think Odo could turn himself into an abacus?
An abacus with googly eyes?
Yeah.
Allow me to demonstrate.
He could be Data levels of annoying. Like, he just turns his mouth into a pipe mouth, grows the Sherlock Holmes hat. It's a good thing he doesn't have any outside interests, because he would really wave those in people's faces.
The humanoid obsession with hobbies is something I'll never understand. She talks to Odo, and he's like, well, this guy is misleading us on a bunch of counts, and one of those is I just talked to your boy, Gul Dukat, and Gul Dukat claims to have been to Guldar Heel's funeral. He was, like, one of the great gulls, and everybody in Cardassia was mourning his death a few years ago. A surprising amount of honor for a guy that is kind of like the Sergeant Schultz of this universe.
Yeah, I guess there are no open casket funerals on Cardassia, huh?
Like, have you ever heard of anybody that ran a prison camp?
Of course. I think everyone has a friend who's run a prison camp.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and if they died, it would be a really sad day. but yeah, and then Odo, like, looks into this guy's travel plans, and it turns out he went way out of his way to stop at Deep Space Nine.
I don't know why yet, but the man in that cell wanted to be caught.
And that sort of breaks the story, you know? Like, it's a disappointment to Kira. She's forced to confront the idea that this is not Guldar Heel. Like, Guldar Heel was on Cardassia getting his ass kissed by the Prime Minister or something when the accident happened. He couldn't have ever contracted this disease. He is not the bad guy that she was hoping and enjoying him to be.
It's like anything else. Like, to be given a thing that you've wanted and then to have it taken away is so much more painful than to not get the thing at all. And Kira here was given the ultimate, you know, vengeance gift. And to see that be untrue is very painful for her.
I can't believe I'm listening to this.
When I was a kid, I got a Sega Genesis for my birthday one year. And it was like a big deal because I had wanted a video game system forever. And I'd begged my parents for years and years. And they were like really anti getting me a video game system. I was so happy that I got this thing that I took it over to a friend's house and somehow was getting picked up at the bus stop or something and left it in a bag on the ground.
Oh, no.
And this thing that I just, like, built up wanting for my entire childhood. And I'm finally, like, I'm, like, 9 years old, and I finally have it. I finally have my own video game system, and it's fucking gone, and it's my fault.
God, that had to be painful. So you never got it back. It was lost? That was it?
It was gone, man. Gone, baby, gone.
Oh, shit.
We drove around Berkeley for an hour trying to see if we saw anybody with a bag that looked like the one that I'd lost, but no dice.
Did you ever get another?
Yeah, I think like 6 months later I saved up enough money to buy a used console.
But at that time, video games had moved on to PlayStation 3.
Right.
I'm sorry, sir, we do no longer carry the Sega Genesis. Perhaps I could interest you in a computer processor video game system.
Yeah. It really hurt, and I could really feel the hurt in Kira, because while it makes this guy way less bad, it's not what she wanted him to be.
Yeah.
And so she heads back down to the brig one last time, and she says, I know for a fact that you're not Guldar Heel, and why are you like you've been sitting here representing yourself to be this horrible man, and now after I look at all the evidence, I can see definitively that you're not.
This starts a monologue by Harris Yulin that is, I think, one of the high points in the season.
Yeah.
It's really a story about the guilt of complicity. This guy did not kill people. This guy didn't really even admit to seeing many people killed. But what he was there. And he could hear it, and he knew what was going on. And he didn't do anything about it.
And he's lived with this horrible guilt. And she winds up kind of pitying him for that, despite his complicity in a really horrible thing that he's felt guilty about for years. The horror of having lived through that and not being strong enough to try to do something to counteract it is something that she really pities in him. And she just, like, at a certain point just reaches up and, like, taps the button that dissipates the force field and lets him out.
His intention is noble. It does not forgive what he did. But the idea that he wants to be the figure that stands trial as a way for Cardassia to finally be punished for the atrocities is noble and good. It doesn't forgive his complicity, but I think he makes the case for it in this way that, like, there's no undoing what happened, but what you can undo is the ignorance of what happened.
Right. Oh, yeah, and one thing we didn't talk about is, like, that he had plastic surgery to look like Guldar Heel.
Yeah. Yeah, this is one of the things that breaks the case, is that they found out that he bought a large amount of drugs. Drugs that are used by people who have a lot of plastic surgery so that the loaf will take.
Right. Yeah, it's a...
You don't want to get that loaf rejection, Ben.
All-purpose flour is what he was on.
Yeah, you don't want to wake up and your loaf is on the pillow.
No, that would be bad. Yeah, like, I think his goal was, like, go be Guldar Heel for all intents and purposes and stand trial for the crimes of Guldar Heel. Like, submit right. himself to the punishment that Darheel deserved and let Cardassia see what that means.
It would have been interesting to see what would have happened if he hadn't been discovered and had been put to trial.
Yeah. Golden cut. So the button on the episode is Kira is, like, walking him down the hallway, and I guess he's gonna go to Bajor because they're, like, he's pretty much cut himself off from all Cardassian life at this point.
Yeah, once you square up with your maid, there's no going home.
Yeah.
After that.
Yeah.
Like, one of the notes about him is that he really tipped his housekeeper before he left.
Yeah.
He's left definitely not planning to go home.
Left more than a $20 bill on the dresser before he left. There's this local drunk that has been in the holding cells a couple of times who's standing at a Quark's bar. Quark's bar has that, like, window that you can sidle up to that just is out on the promenade itself.
Yeah, it's giving you drinks in plastic cups at the window.
This is like... There needs to be more of this, man. There is a coffee shop that has, like, a little pastry selection that has a window on Sunset Boulevard near my house, and I walk up to it and get my morning coffee and croissant, and I can take my dog there on a leash, and it's the greatest.
Yeah, you want a window.
That should be standard in restaurants. Have a window. Let me get a styrofoam cup full of margarita.
That's what I'm saying.
This dude, I guess he like ordered a pork chop, and the wait staff at Quark's Bar had come out and put the steak knife down, and
it
he turns around.
It looks forked at the end, though, right? I thought it was a cheese knife.
Oh, maybe he ordered the cheese plate. He's finished his meal. And
asshole do you have to be to get the cheese plate at the window? Like, that's suspect behavior automatically.
There should have been googly eyes on that cheese knife. I'm keeping my eye on you. He turns around and sinks this knife into Maritza. And Maritza goes down and is bleeding out on the promenade, and Kira's like,
why? He wasn't Darheel, why?
And he says,
he's a Cardassian. That's reason enough.
And her response is,
it's not.
It is not enough. It is not.
Oh, hi, Mark.
It's not enough, Rambo.
You get the single brass instrument of grief here in the God shot. And sort of a lot of people, we haven't been keeping track this season, but I think Kira is the leader in the clubhouse of people dying in her arms. You know?
Yeah.
Great big body count for Kira, not of people that she's killed, but of people that she's witnessed being killed or dying.
Right. Yeah. She's giving this guy the full Kaiopaka grief treatment.
Ben, who is season one about? Because if it hasn't been settled before, I think it's settled now. This season one of Deep Space Nine is about Major Kira and like her place on the station.
Yeah.
The station's place in the quadrant and like what it means to be in a post-Cardassian war universe.
It's very interesting because I think that in TNG, we are the Federation, our proxy, and especially in the early episodes, is Wesley.
Wesley, the boy.
The boy. Young Wesley Crusher.
My son.
And the Federation is where we live. And in Deep Space Nine, I kind of think that they've flipped that around. Bajor is where we live, and Kira is our proxy.
Right.
And the Federation is this kind of likable group of people, but who are new here.
That's a really interesting point, and that Wesley comparison especially. It's a big part of Star Trek is choosing who your proxy is, and sometimes the proxy is foisted upon you by the show. But the cast of this show is so democratic, like there are so many characters, and few of them really step out to lead the rest, that it's hard to argue against Kira being that person, the proxy for the viewer.
Did you like the episode?
It's hard to choose an episode that's stronger than this one. I mean, it is sober, serious, adult Star Trek happening here.
Yeah.
That this is sort of the best of what Star Trek does, is tell this kind of story. And it was well acted, and I'm glad there wasn't a lollipop B story, because I don't want that in something this serious. This was really good, I thought.
Yeah, I agree.
What about you?
I think it's a pretty terrific episode.
You want to see if we have any really terrific P1s?
I would love to.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, our first priority one message is of a commercial nature, and it goes like this. No one can know about this. A podcast where we play every Final Fantasy. Send help. Wait.
You are never going to run out of material if that is your podcast game right there.
Seriously. And in case there was any confusion, No One Can Know About This is the name of the podcast, it looks like. Which,
whoa, what a great name.
Yeah, I love that. That really... I feel like that dovetails nicely with our feeling of slight embarrassment over what we're doing here.
Yeah, that's a good brand. That's a successful brand, Ben.
Yeah. I've clicked over to this, and it's described as a podcast where we play every Final Fantasy using recordings from actual play sessions mixed with commentary from our future selves. Starting with a 6-episode season 1, chronicling a descent into madness while playing the first game. Hosted by Jeff Ekman and Ryan Kasmiski.
I bet they're playing one of the first versions on a Sega Genesis, Ben.
Yeah. Oh, it's triggering to me, but I'm sure everybody else will enjoy it.
That's great.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Do we have any others, Adam?
Yeah, we've got a personal message here from Siobhan. It is for Matt. And this message has been requested in the angry Frenchman voice. known to us as Vichy French Guy. Happy birthday, favorite husband! Here's hoping we are not so far behind in this podcast that it takes us months to get to this message. Also, per your suggestion, fuck Raz. I really prefer your Vichy French guy to mine, Ben, but I gave it my best.
I really like yours because it's like through the lens of a thing I described to you. Yeah. It's like, it would be like if you were doing your best Rodney Dangerfield, but you'd never actually seen Rodney Dangerfield perform.
Yeah.
You just knew he was like a guy with a Long Island accent who gets no respect.
You're a consumer of a ton of French culture in the way that I'm not. So, like, I also feel like you're just better equipped to do an accurate interpretation of Vichy French guy, whereas I'm just doing an impression of you doing Vichy French guy. And it's like making a copy of a copy. Like, mine is very blurry.
Generational decay is a factor.
Yeah. If you're interested in having us read a message about your video game podcast or any other message of a commercial or personal nature, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200. They are one of the best ways to help the ongoing production of this program.
They are. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
It's one of those episodes, Ben, where my Shimoda was left blank. Maybe I might like to hear yours first, and that might serve to inspire me to select one, because I really struggled with this.
I struggled as well, Adam. My Shimoda is a background Shimoda. There's the last scene in the episode where they're walking Maritza down the promenade. We see in soft focus in the background at that window at Quark's bar, the guy that will stab him. But that guy is there drinking with a buddy who very much notice that I am not part of this way, takes a big drink from his glass of blue liquid while the stabbing is going down. Like he never really knows this dude has a knife and is standing there waiting to do some dirt, but is like, not part of this. Glug, 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 glug. Yummy blue liquid. And then that guy is also in the god shot at the end, like standing over Maritza's body as the crowd forms. Like, whoa, what just happened? Nothing I'm aware of.
I feel like a drink makes a great alibi in that moment, because if you're involved, who could possibly consume a beverage at that moment?
Right.
Nice job by him.
Yeah. Yeah. He really spared himself any uncomfortable questions, and he still has the drink in his hand when he walks over to take a look at Maritza's body.
So, what's going on over here?
Yeah. Seems like a kind of a big mess. Shame.
Anyway, can I get it? Anyone anything? I'm going to go back to the bar.
My tab's still open, guys. If I hit it pretty big at Dabo earlier, so they're letting me have them for free.
That's a pretty great Shimoda, Ben. Like a craps player putting his chips on top of someone else's, I think I'll just go with yours as my own. Double Shimoda, Ben.
Yeah.
Gotta get that gold press action.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them, and that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of TripleClick.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
What do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is the last episode of season one, episode 19, In the Hands of the Prophets, when a Bajoran spiritual leader objects to Keiko's secular teachings. She threatens to destroy the alliance between Bajor and the Federation. Do you want to find out if we're going to be doing some drinking?
I may be on this person's side just because I object to Keiko. Yeah, let's see how we're going to do this one.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
All right. Randomly between 1 and 15, got a 6.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Looks like we are not going to be drinking at him.
All right. Well, this is the last episode that we're doing before we switch to a board game-like format.
Yeah. I'm really excited about this. I feel like we're going to switch to a board game-like format. We're going to need to like have a way for people to check on what the current status of the board is.
I'm into that.
I think it's going to be cool.
Looking
forward to having it.
So many people accuse us of fraudulent game playing, W/R/T, the vetoes of Greatest Gen, and how we've gone with the drunk format of Season 1 DS9. In the interest of total transparency, we're gonna share everything.
Yeah, we're going to put our cards on the table. We do take some shit from time to time.
No.
I think fraudulent gameplay has only ever been an accusation that's fallen on deaf ears, because it's just not a thing.
My conscience is clean, man.
But if you want to accuse us of being liberal cucks or of being insufficiently liberal, we're wide open for that. So let us know.
Well, so many ways, Ben, to support the show.
Yeah.
One of the easiest and freest ways is by leaving the show a great review. We, a long time ago, sort of gamified the review system in order to heighten the visibility of The Greatest Generation as a podcast. That's really one of the best ways to get us more viewers, and that's an important way to keep the show going. Financial support is how this show keeps going as a production, and support for the show is done over at MaximumFun.org/donate. And as ever, we appreciate those.
Yeah. If you feel like this show is something that is a good thing in your life on a monthly basis, it costs serious time and money to produce it. Getting to like tens of thousands of listeners has been an amazing journey for us, but it also means that our hosting costs are crazy bananas, and any amount you can contribute on a monthly basis to help cover those costs is greatly appreciated. And I think it's at $5 a month and up, you get access to all of the bonus content we've ever recorded, and there's some really fun stuff in there. So
there's some stuff in there right now, and also some fun stuff ahead. I know we've talked a lot about how much more we want to pack that listener support feed with stuff in the coming year. So no better time than right now.
We should thank Adam Ragusa, who's made a ton of great original music for the show. Almost all of the music at this point is Adam Ragusa's work. And Dark Materia, who made the original Picard song, but is the kind of bookend at this point.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that's willing to resort to terrorism.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.